are back on the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield, and I am joined by my co-host, Uncle Dig. How are you doing today, Uncle Dig?
Man, I'm doing great, Lucas. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I know, man. It's really great to be back on the air with you. We got a new intro, a new podcast, and some new things coming to the show. You know, we're going to get to our headlines really soon here, but I just want to start off the show and just talk about, you know, the more new things that happen in cannabis, the more things stay the same. And I just want to jump right into the news that in Washington State here, all of our cannabis bills that we were talking about at the end of the year last year, the cannabis tax break, the rest for patients dig, all those bills tanked and did not make it again this session, even though they made it up to like the 5-yard line, literally, right up to the very end of the process.
Well, you know, it's been very frustrating to watch the political process in Washington go along pretty much as an outsider since y'all legalized. It's been, you know, initial hope was had, but we're also learning with this legislation is that if you don't get it passed on the first referendum, the state legislature is not going to help you. And that's in other states too. Other states have had trouble modifying their existing cannabis laws once they're on the books. So people, I urge you, if you pass legal cannabis in your state, homegrow needs to be on there, and no taxes for patients needs to be on there. Because if it's not, the government's not going to let you have it.
Yeah, they are really unwilling to let go of letting people be able to grow their own cannabis in Washington State, and they're really hesitant to give the tax break to patients. And I just want to share with the audience that tax break was put onto cannabis. And I think I might have told you this before, Dig. They put the tax on medical cannabis, so medical cannabis patients and adult use or recreational users would pay the same amount for their cannabis. Now, do you know why, Dig? Do you know what the reasoning was for they want that equality there with those prices? Do you know why they wanted that?
I can't imagine what they said it was for.
This was done back in 5052, and when they reformed the medical cannabis laws here in Washington State. And the reason given was there is a practice called looping where patients down in Colorado allegedly would buy cheaper medical cannabis and then go out on the streets and then sell it. And so in Washington State, they wanted to avoid that. Because all patients are criminals, you know, Dig. And okay. So they wanted to make sure that patients didn't get cheap cannabis, because if we did, because we're on disability and we're sick or for whatever reason, we're going to go take that cheap cannabis and go start selling it on the streets.
Okay.
That was the reasoning.
So, okay. So they were concerned about a very, 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 very minuscule part of the illicit market. That illicit market, that medical, that patient to gray and black market pipeline, has diminished greatly. A lot of those operators no longer operate because the profit margin's not there anymore. It's not worth the risk. And I would say that most of the operators that who are diverting legal cannabis from the I-502 and from medical grows onto the into the illegal market are larger operators. They're not small home growers. These are giant grows. I think that that's a red herring, and I think that it was just a way to eliminate low cost cannabis and limit access by patients to divert them onto the traditional medicine market. I think that's what that was. It's a handout to the pharmaceutical companies, as it were.
Yeah, and like you said, since it's been in there, it's been really hard to roll that back. So if you are in Washington State, consider contacting your legislator to talk to them about medical cannabis and taxes. It is something that we have been really working on, and at home grows too, because all the other states have home grows, and Washington State, and I don't think Illinois and New Jersey do, but all the rest of them, which there are, what was it, 18 now? That's including D.C. And we want home grows too in Washington State. We just want the same rights here in Washington State. And now, let's check the news.
This is a Cannabis Sativa special report.
Let's get on to our news real quick, and we're going to start right here in Washington State. And if you live here in Washington, you know that we've had some robberies recently of cannabis shops, and there have been three in particular. One was over in Covington, and sadly there, a worker there, a security guard, shot the assailant there when they were trying to rob the store. There was another robbery up in Bellevue, Washington, and then the police went on a chase, and then they had to shoot that assailant because gunfire was exchanged. And then there's been some locally right here in Tacoma. There was a robbery where a buttender was shot. And it's really going on all around the nation. I don't know if you've seen, Dig, there's problems like this going on in Maine and in Massachusetts. Have you guys seen any robberies or anything going on in Oregon?
The short answer is yes, but I'd like to elaborate. I think our problem with violence related to cannabis isn't so much with dispensaries getting robbed, at least not in my area. Maybe that's a problem up in Portland. I'm not super aware of it. The violence that I am aware of with cannabis usually happens either there's land disputes, because so my area is not as much a big sales area as it's more of a giant production area. I live in Southern Oregon. I live in Jackson County, Oregon, which is kind of becoming nationally known as kind of a hotbed of illegal cannabis cultivation. And it is, it's a hotbed of illegal cannabis cultivation. So the violence we see is a little different than the violence you see. And a lot of the violence that I'm aware of is like small time disagreements over money at the point of production, you know, like in the gardens, where the violence happens, not so much at the point of sale. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because it's more like we're talking, they have these grows out in the hills. Well, there'll be thousands of plants, and then there'll be a labor dispute. But it's not a labor dispute with me and some guy I'm working for. It's a labor dispute between some like guy who's working for really scary people who are moving tons of cash. And it's just a different thing out here. I would advise everyone, because you people hear me talking about going and working in the medical cannabis gardens. This was a long time ago. It's a little more dangerous to work on these like grows now. And everything I was doing was legal. It was just federally illegal. It was legal here in the state of Oregon. And then another thing I want to say is like when the environment is created like this with a cash only business, or when you have a commodity and all this violence happen, it echoes for a long time in people who were there for it. You know, I remember when I was a young man, I was at an ER for, I had an injury. I had a broken arm, and it was early in the morning, and a man came with an assault rifle and tried to rob the pharmacy at the hospital. And I remember the off-duty officer shot the guy in the ambulance turnout, and he went ahead of me in the ER, and the guy that tried to rob the place like died on the operating table. It was really messed up, and I'll never forget like the bullet casings on the ground and like the blood like running toward the gutter, but not able to go in because there was like tufts of grass growing around the rim of the gutter. Like, it's stuff you don't forget. And so when the state creates environments like this, when they don't allow cannabis to bank, you're making this cash only business that automatically makes it a target. It's not safe, and it's made unnecessarily unsafe by these laws.
Yeah, and I'm sorry that happened to you, and it sounds like a really scary situation. And that's kind of what we're dealing with here. There's been a lot of fear put into all these robberies. We're having a really big houseless situation out here right now, and it's sort of been implied that the uptick in that and some of the other crimes are all related to these cannabis robberies too. And so all this wrapped up together, including the violence down in your area with the underground market, it all adds to community trauma, and it just adds to more and more problems. And I just wanted to tell the audience that the robbery here in Tacoma, the police actually have two suspects in mind, and they're actually two minors, teenagers. So we're not going to say their names on the air or give out any kind of description. You can easily find that online if you would like to look that up. But I just wanted to tell the audience that they do have people in mind. Those same people were involved in a violent robbery of a pawn shop in Federal Way, Washington. Mm-hmm. So, and they were put on monitoring. They cut off their ankle bracelets, and now they're going on apparently another crime spree. So these aren't necessarily isolated incidents, but we're not in a situation where a bunch of crime crazy houseless people are out robbing cannabis shops. They catch those guys soon and we can kind of settle this down. But we really need to get to the banking part, because that's the biggest problem out there on the
If there's no cash, if there's not piles of cash at these places, they don't get robbed as often. It's just how it is. You know, everyone knows that cannabis is a cash-only business in the states where it's legal, except some places have figured workaround, but for the most part, it's cash-only. So everyone knows. Also, something that the cannabis shops in Oregon did early on that I didn't mention is, I don't know if you remember, but this was, 2015 or something, 2014. All these cannabis businesses hired a bunch of roided out vets that had just got back from Afghanistan to like pull security for them. So when Oregon first legalized, a lot of the guys doing transport were like giant, like roided out, like bro vets, like who you knew were strapped because their shirt said they were, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you got the reputation, like, don't mess with the cannabis industry.
Right. And so there was always that already kind of this built in like reputation, in Oregon that like, if you tried to rob a place, I feel like around here, you were going to get shot.
Wow.
Like, I'm not saying that that's you know the way we should be doing it. I think banking is better than having a bunch of armed people running around, but that's a method.
Well, definitely, because one of the cannabis shop owners here might have been the one in Bellevue said that he is now armed at all times. So again, this whole thing is just adding to more problems, more people being armed, more issues, and we were really calling on the leaders out there in Washington, D.C., to roll back the banking restrictions. It's just common sense. And let's get the cash out of these businesses and it'll cut down on the robberies. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen. The House said they were going to pass some type of cannabis legalization bill. But in the banking bill sponsor said he's going to be pitching a fit until they pass it. But it doesn't look like it's going anywhere.
Well, and it's the same thing. Banking will help make cannabis like dispensary is more safe. When they legalize it across the nation, the problems that we're having with cultivation outdoor like illegal large-scale outdoor cultivation here will be dissipated across the entire country. I know everyone's like, well, that's bad. I'm like, well, no, like it's good because it disperses the environmental impact and if you're a law enforcement, this is good for you too. Because now if you're a local guy, you only have to deal with 3 cannabis grows, not 400.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So every county has enough resources to deal with the cannabis scourge, and no one's getting shot over bags of money in the hills. It's good, sort of. It's better.
Yeah.
And I think that what people don't realize is a lot of this legalization, like the way that we've chosen to legalize this plant has inadvertently led to more violence because of the piecemeal nature we do it.
Yes. And we were told, if you go and look at I-502, the actual third bullet point there that this was supposed to do was to quote-unquote take cannabis out of the hands of, quote, violent gangs. Now, we know who they're talking about when they say that. So we know that that's a racist statement. We know what they're trying to do there. But they said that this was all going to stop with legalization. But it hasn't. Like you were saying, the piecemeal, the banking.
There's a huge racial component to how we talk about cannabis production illegally down here, too.
Oh, definitely.
They're always talking about cartels.
Yes.
And what that's code for is, you know, Mexicans. And what I always tell people, I'm like, is there a cartel presence in the grow spaces out here? Yes. But there's also Israelis, Bulgarians, all kinds of crazy Eastern Europeans out there growing weed, all kinds of. Like everybody is coming, like organized crime doesn't care about borders. So, and there's also people who have been operating in this valley for years who have been growing this whole time and never stopped and never will stop. And they've been operating for years and the cops don't even know who they are.
Right.
Like, So like, you got to remember that too, is like, you're only seeing the people that get caught. And that's a very small percentage. The scale of cannabis cultivation being done, not only in this county, but across the country, is mind-boggling.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. They say in here in Washington State that half of the market is still underground or coming from some type of quote-unquote illegal sources. So that's why we need to pass the banking law. We need to deschedule it, make it at least a Schedule 2 or a Schedule 3 narcotic so we can start researching it, and just make it part of everyday society. And I really feel like a lot of these problems will go away. And so let's cross our fingers that the powers that be can get this done. We're going to move on to our next news story, which is just an outrageous story. When I told my wife about this story, Dig, she really felt like this was a big, big problem, and so do I. And I was actually shocked that they're going to go this far. And it comes from my home state in Alabama, and I don't know why I would ever be shocked at anything they do in Alabama. But they decided, everybody knows that medical cannabis is now legal in Alabama. Now, it's going to take forever. Next year, they're going to roll it out. But some guy decided in Alabama he's going to pass a law that if you are a woman and you want to use medical cannabis, you have to show a negative pregnancy test first. Dig? Just crazy.
Okay. Yeah, so they're, the Republicans have figured out that they can victimize women and demand things from them that are unreasonable, and they found that that's a winning political strategy, so they're going to continue to push. So I don't want to get onto the subject of reproductive rights, other than to demonstrate how rights are taken away and how that leads to more rights being taken away, okay? So you start with abortion. I don't care what your opinion on abortion was. It was a right that was protected, and now it's gone. We have less rights, okay? We move on, right? So now we have less rights for women in those states. I don't care if you agree with those rights. They were rights they had. Now they don't. Now that they've chipped away on those abortion rights, they're going to go ahead and chip away on their rights to privacy. Medical privacy like this, they're going to demand a negative pregnancy test. Now, you have a right to privacy in your medical. Pregnancy is a medical condition. I didn't decide that. That's legal.
Yes.
Legally, it's a medical condition.
Yes.
So if it's a medical condition, they're subject to privacy. So this law, I would think, violates HIPAA.
Oh, big time.
And I think it will be struck down in the courts. But in the short term, this shows everybody, right? It shows everybody that people who seek to take away whites' rights are not going to stop where you may have thought. So they're not going to stop with this. They're going to go to this. How else are they going to invade your private life next? Maybe they're going to have ideology tests for voting soon or whatever. Like this stuff doesn't stop. And this is what I would remind people, that once you take away a right, like once you give someone a right, it's hard to take away. But once you take away a right, people who take away rights don't stop with one right. They keep doing it until you stop them.
Yeah.
Period.
But I was shocked to see the headline. I didn't think they would be this creative.
It's upsetting.
All right. So the next story is a little better news when it comes to cannabis. And that is when we're talking about your heart when it comes to cannabis. And there has been a lot of news that cannabis might have a negative effect on your heart in long term. And this study comes out of the American Journal of Medicine. And it studied cannabis consumers who use cannabis 5 times a month. Now, that does not include Dig and I. So we just wanted to mention that this study does have some good results in it when it comes to cannabis in your heart, but the jury is still out on this issue. And what it said was that cannabis has an effect on your heart at the moment you are using it, but cannabis use in the past does not have an effect on your heart. Did I get that right, Dick?
Yeah, yeah. And the medical term for that is transient. Or it's a transient effect, right? Like if I drink some caffeine right now, my heart rate will raise for the next, like, whatever, 30 minutes, right? But after that, that negative effect on my heart rate is no longer a problem. It's like I never had that caffeine. It's a transient effect, only while the substance is in you, right? And I think I'm going to go ahead and read the conclusion of this so everyone knows exactly what they're saying. Now, this is not for heavy users. This is for what I would call mild cannabis users. Here's from the article. Current cannabis use was associated with lower resting heart rate, which supports finding from experimental studies. Past cumulative exposure to cannabis was not associated with heart rate, indicating the effects of cannabis exposure on heart rate are transient. Our findings add to the growing body of evidence suggesting that a lack of deleterious association of cannabis use at a level typical of the general population on surrogate outcomes of cardiovascular disease. So what the article is saying is that if you smoke a little weed every weekend and then don't smoke weed the rest of the time, cannabis is not going to affect your heart, long-term heart health. Now, what it is not saying is that if you're taking blunts to the dome every day, like I do sometimes, and like I'm sure Lucas does, that maybe you're a heavy cannabis user and this study doesn't really apply to you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The jury still is on that. Although I've seen studies that say CBD is okay. So yeah, the jury is still out on that. And I just heard something today that they were talking about how to be healthier, and the last thing was don't smoke. Now, they didn't say cigarettes or cannabis, so I've really turned to vaping recently, so I can't say that that's going to help anything or it be any better. So this is just a study to keep in mind. The jury's still out on this, so we want to recognize that, and keep that in mind. If you have any kind of heart condition and you want to use cannabis, Cannabis Corner says, we say, make sure you talk to your doctor and make sure you're being careful. So our last story takes us down to Florida. And this story is another story that I put under the headline or the category of the establishment does not believe in medical cannabis. And they're going to try to bust you and prove that every chance they get. And this case involved a doctor. They sent in two individuals, and I'll talk about them here in a minute after we hear from Dig. We talked about they sent in two people, and they impersonated a veteran and a person with disability, and they tried to fake having some type of condition. The doctor recommended them the medical cannabis, and then the Department of Health in Florida come and took the doctor to court and tried to take his license.
Yeah, those police officers doing a little stolen valor and a malingering.
Yeah.
So I have a real problem with this story for a lot of reasons. One is this doctor was operating within Florida's legal medical system.
Yeah, he was.
He wasn't doing anything wrong. These police officers went in. These police officers are no better than the people that robbed those dispensaries. They are going into a place of legitimate business and wielding not their own violence, but state violence.
Yes.
Against someone who is trying to help people. And that's not okay. That's terrorism. That's state terrorism. These are not undercover police officers. These are secret police officers. And in America, we need to start understanding the difference.
Yeah, and they tried to take the doctor to go to the cleaner, and they tried to take his license because they want to prove that he was fake. They wanted to prove that you can fake having a – and another thing they want to prove is that you can fake having a medical condition and still get medical cannabis. See, that's a big thing right here in Washington State.
People have been doing this for years, and it's always been an overblown problem. If one person in your state pretends to be blind and gets benefits, it does not mean that the other nine blind people don't deserve benefits. It's a straw man argument, and I'm sick of hearing it.
Yeah, well, Washington State, back in the medical cannabis revision that we talked about at the beginning of the show, one of the big things they talked about were quote-unquote fakers. And so I think they still believe that. That's part of why our stuff doesn't pass, because they don't want they don't want the medical cannabis patients to get a tax break, because, you know, half of those medical cannabis patients, Dig, are fakers. And so even out here in Washington, which somebody would say is a quote-unquote liberal state or a blue state, those same stereotypes and barriers to access and barriers to cannabis being legitimate, they still apply. And I just want to go back and bring up the Alabama story real quick, and I apologize. You know, there hasn't been any response from pretty much anybody about that law that they're trying to pass in Alabama to make a woman show a negative cannabis pregnancy test before she gets medical cannabis.
No ACLU.
Nobody. And I really believe that it exposes a weakness in the in a lot of arguments, in a lot of people's arguments on a lot of different issues, that they exclude this one because it involves cannabis, and they just haven't figured out a way. I don't think they're trying to do it like, I think some are trying to do it like in a negative way and on purpose. Right. I think in the other ways, I just don't think a lot of people have a way to talk about it correctly. But down in Florida, they were actually trying to go after this doctor. But the good news is, the whole point of the story is, the judge said that the doctor didn't do anything wrong and he was able to keep his license.
Good. So the police were – so here's the thing. Here's what people need to know. Secret police are experts at fraud, okay? That's their job. They go in, they commit fraud, trap someone else in a proposed crime, and then arrest them. So these policemen were committing fraud. Their fraud does not make the doctor a criminal. Just because you successfully defraud somebody – doesn't make them an accessory to your crime. And these policemen, in the way they do these stings, are setting up dangerous precedents where if you get ripped off, you can also get prosecuted. They don't frame it like that, but that's what it does. And that's why we need to be very careful about trusting what cops do when they're lying. This whole thing was built on a lie.
Yeah, and I'm really disturbed that they impersonate a veteran. You're a veteran, and I'm really disturbed that they impersonated somebody with a disability, because as a blind person, number one, you don't want to impersonate my disability because you're going to be hating it. And same with any kind of PTSD or anything. Don't impersonate disabilities, because the person that has the disability, they don't want it. You know what I mean? It's not something you go around and try to fake or impersonate. Yes. So it's very disturbing.
And when you actually have a disability, a lot of people don't realize this. Like, you don't really want to be disabled. It's not like – it's not a win. It's not a win. Like, a disability check isn't a win.
No, no.
This is my last resort. And a lot of people don't understand that because they've never been disabled. And so I just like people to, like, just be a little more kind-hearted and really think about this stuff. It's not okay to do this kind of stuff to doctors and disabled people. And these police officers ought to be ashamed of themselves.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by the Dr. Green Thumb XG Pen by Grinko Science. And we are back on the Cannabis Corner, and we are here for this week's interview. And this week we have a special guest. We are joined by cannabis activist and disability activist and Tacoma native Kyle Jollyboy. And Kyle is going to be telling us about a experience he had with our local sheriff, Ed Troyer. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So let's go ahead and get started on this. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Kyle, and what are you doing in Tacoma these days?
Well, I was born and raised here. I'm a South Tacoma kid originally, and I went to private school, and then I graduated from public high school, Mount Tahoma. And as a teenager, I got into cannabis, but it was mainly with smoking with friends, you know, stuff like that. And in 2009, I became a medical marijuana patient for the first time. And that's where I got into work towards medical marijuana.
And you are a medical marijuana patient. And what do you use your medical cannabis for?
I have chronic pain. I have cerebral palsy on my left side of my body. And I use it as a pain relief.
Now, this thing that happened with Ed Troyer all got started at a local cannabis event. But before we get to that, I just want to kind of set the stage real quick and kind of put this in context and talk a little bit about Sheriff Ed Troyer and two cases that are going on with him real quick. So there was an incident last year with a newspaper delivery driver named Cedric Altimer. And Mr. Altimer is a black man, and he was delivering his papers, mind his own business, 2 a.m. in Sheriff Troyer's neighborhood. And Sheriff Troyer thought he was up to no good, and he got in his car, went out and followed Mr. Altimer around, ended up blocking Mr. Altimer in, and called the Tacoma police 42 police showed up in response to this call, and we all have seen the stories about experiences black men have had with police and are having with police. So this was a very dangerous situation for Mr. Altheimer. And it turns out that two misdemeanors came out of this case about Sheriff Troyer basically filing a false police report. And he's also clearly, nobody is debating this. All over the media, everybody's talking about this. He also is clearly drunk in the call to 911. And he is on trial right now for those two misdemeanors in the county next door. And then there was another case involving a man named Manny Ellis, who was killed right about the time that the George Floyd case happened over in Minnesota. And this case, Manny Ellis was killed by the Tacoma police. There are three police right now on trial for that. How this involves Eric Troyer was, he at that time was the spokesperson for the sheriff's department. There were sheriffs there at the scene when Mr. Ellis was killed, and Ed Troyer went on to the news and told this whole outlandish story about what happened to Mr. Ellis. And we know that it was not the truth because other witnesses came out 2 months later with video of what happened, and the video did not line up at all with what Sheriff Troyer said. And it was so bad that the Pierce County actually awarded the Ellis family $4 million just this week for that whole entire case. Ed Troyer, like I mentioned, was on the media and on the radio talking about the story and just totally falsified the information. So there we have two high-profile stories, and I just want to talk about to kind of set the stage what happened at Kyle at this cannabis event, or not at the event, after the event. So tell us about the event, Kyle. It was a local event, and you got to go meet world-famous Chong of Cheech and Chong. Tell us about the event, and what was it like meeting Chong?
Yes, the cannabis store that I go to on a regular basis had a drawing where you could meet and greet Tommy Chong, and I was one of 25 people to meet him in July. And I was so excited, I went out and I told my friend that I wanted a shirt made prior to meeting Tommy that said, because of all the stuff, I should say, all the stuff that was happening with Troyer and in the news, a friend of mine, Jared, he makes shirts that says, marijuana is safer than alcohol, and he sends them all over the world. Freely of charge. And I had this idea that marijuana was safer than Ed Troyer. And so he made me that shirt, and I wore it to meet Tommy. And I was photographed for the Tacoma Weekly, our local paper. And the caption read that I had a message for Pierce County Sheriff Ed Troyer. And that's when my troubles began with him.
Yeah, I didn't remember hearing about that that caption there. So basically, Tacoma Weekly kind of stoked the fire a little bit.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Sheriff Troyer was not at the cannabis dispensary. So how he saw the picture in the newspaper. Then what did he do then?
That night, or the next night, I don't remember. But soon after, he saw the article in the paper. And at 2:06 a.m., he put it out to his friends on his personal Facebook page, $250, best caption on my photo. And that $250 was going to go to their favorite charity of choice. And his people tore me apart.
And then didn't he put on there, too, that it said, Ed, I approve of this message?
Yes, that was the final comment, or some people say that it wasn't him saying it, that he just chose that comment, but the final comment to win was, I'm Ed Troyer and I approve of this message. And as far as I know, no money ever went out to his people. It was just all a joke on my behalf.
I want to talk to you a little bit more about the comments made by Ed Troyer's people on his page, which you have to assume are people that he knows. What kind of stuff were they saying to you, Kyle?
Well, at the time, I had a four-year-old beard that went down halfway down my chest and long hair, and people were calling me homeless. They were calling me a bum. They say I was a dope because I smoked dope. They knew the color of my kitchen. They knew that I played videos. They knew where I lived. It was pretty scary.
And then Sheriff Troyer even went so far to contact you on your personal inbox.
Yes, he did. And he said once he found out that I was disabled, he took it down. But hours had passed, and the damage had been done. But he tried to deny everything. He says that I hurt his feelings by doing what I did. And then in the end, he blocked me. After he was done with me, he blocked me.
No apology?
No apology on his end whatsoever. And in fact, he said he wanted to meet me and, quote, unquote, my crew. Because I have a group of people that we were protesting Troyer in March. We started in March in front of his house over Cedric's attack. And he said he didn't know who I was, but with my features and my long hair and beard and disability and last name Jolly Boys, because I have family in politics, he knows who I was. So I wasn't just a stranger to Troyer.
Now, after that happened, what have you done to sort of push back on Troyer? I know you filed some complaints and done some things. Tell us about that.
Yes, I started going up in front of Tacoma City Council and Pierce County Council. And the first time at Pierce County Council, they let me talk the full 3 minutes. After that, they've pretty much shut me down. No one's taken responsibility for Troyer. No one's reprimanded Troyer. Since he's an elected official, he's able to do what he pleases because the only people that he's accountable for is to the voters. I filed a formal complaint soon after all the comments and stuff, and with the Pierce County Sheriff's Department, it went missing for about 3 or 4 weeks, so I filed a second one. I was interviewed by Internal Affairs, and that was it. I mean, I've not heard anything from them. During this period of time, I was standing up for Cedric still. I've had, soon after I'd cut my beard and shaved my head, I had a gentleman come close to me in a vehicle and take my picture. So he was doing it for a school project. I didn't buy that, so I remembered his license plate number. The Pierce County Sheriff's Department informed me about 3 months ago that the detective that was doing the investigation was told to stop investigating. And since then, I've talked to the governor's office several times. I've talked to the AG's office several times. I'm just raising as much stink as I can with no avail.
Yeah, and all the times you've went to the city council and the Pierce County Council, have any of the council people or city council people reached out to you to say anything to you about this?
Yes, one has. His name is Ryan Mello. I did a Zoom meeting, and they're trying to find ways to have some control over the sheriff department, but they're just not there yet. But out of nearly more than two dozen officials, one has come forward and talked to me.
So what do you want to come out of this whole thing? What do you think should happen to Troyer for his, I would say, bullying behavior towards you as an elected official? What do you think should happen?
I agree with you there that he's a bully, and he thinks he's above the law. In fact, I learned a new term. It's called badge heavy, and that's when someone has a badge and they believe they're above the law. What I believe should happen to Troyer is he cannot be a law enforcement official. with his history and having a badge and a gun, he has too much power. We need, and I really want to stress that I'm not anti-cop. I'm anti-bully cop. I'm anti-murderous cop. I'm anti-bad cop. We need to bring dignity back to Pierce County and Tacoma and as far as the law enforcement departments are concerned.
So I wanted to ask you, Kyle, I'm friends with you on Facebook, and I see that this has really affected you. You have seemed to have some, I don't want to say PTSD symptoms, but it really seems to have been bothering you. You have single-handedly basically had to take on Troyer with the help of your quote-unquote crew. They've been helping you, and people have been supporting you, but nobody is really holding Troyer accountable, and I know that's affected you as well. So talk about how this has actually affected you and your mental health.
It's affected me in the way that I've had to – I have dash cams on my car now, front and back, so it records everything in front of me and everything in back behind me. I have a Ring doorbell on my home now, so I can see who's at my door, and it tapes them. I have a husky dog now. I have stated publicly that I will not, if I'm ever pulled over by a sheriff's department, I am not getting out of my car whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because of my fear for what might happen. Because I still drive around with the Resign Ed sign on my car. And in fact, a motorist asked me yesterday what that meant. I told him that we had a bad sheriff that needed to resign. And that's the purpose for the sign on my car. So I'm a moving target, I believe. But I know that, even though I know that, I still am not backing down. Because Pierce County has had decades of, besides Troyer, there was a sheriff named George Janovich that ran with the mob when I was growing up. So the trust of the Pierce County Sheriff's Department has not always been there in my eyes.
Well, I know a lot of this sort of is giving you some financial hardships, and you do have a GoFundMe page. People can help you out. How can people find that?
You can Google... Or I don't know if you can go to, I guess you can go to GoFundMe and search it, but it's under Troyer Targets Disabled Man. And I've spent probably about $3,000-$4,000 on my safety and security. Because of my disability, I'm not able to defend myself, so I've had to do the Ring doorbell. I had to do the dog. I had to do the dash cams. You know, I've had to watch my back some, and it's put a lot of stress in my life. And any help and all help is appreciated.
Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with, Kyle, like how to get in touch with you or how people can help with your cause?
If you're on Facebook, I have a like page. It's called Troyer Must Go, and we've hashtagged that, Troyer Must Go. You can find me. You can find information there. I'm on Facebook. I go in front of city council. What I believe is that I'm not, Cedric and I are not the only ones. And I know this by wearing the shirt. You see, I wear the shirt now and then that says marijuana is safe in the night at Troyer. And when I'm out doing that, I have people coming up telling me their experiences with Ed Troyer. You know, and it's, I know there's more people out there. And the more it's told, I think the more it'll shed light on Troyer's 30 years in Pierce County, because he has a history of bad stuff and as a public official for the last 30-some years.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.
It was really great to hear Kyle's story, and be sure to check out his Facebook page there. And if you can help Kyle out in any way, that he mentioned there. Be sure to do that too. This whole thing with Sheriff Ed Troyer has really negatively affected Kyle's life. I hope that he brought that through in the interview as somebody who knows Kyle and watches him as a friend and pays attention to what is going on in his life. This has been a big problem for him. And what was meant to be a positive day there with Chong at the dispensary here in Tacoma has really turned into a big problem. And I think the biggest issue with this dig is nobody's coming to help Kyle. All the politicians, like you mentioned, local politicians, they're all being silent. The sheriff still is in office, and he has so many issues that I don't want to say are bigger than Kyle, but he has some big issues, and he's still in office, and nobody's helping out Kyle. So it's a big issue here going on here in Tacoma with this.
Yeah, it's really messed up. It's really messed up with when people in positions of power, first of all, can't take criticism that doesn't affect their power base at all, and also lash out at people when they come forward with legitimate criticism. And it's really bad when a sheriff employs vigilante tactics against people. It's not okay.
This episode of the Cannabis Corner is brought to you by the Dr. Green Thumb XG Pen by Grinko Science. So now we're going to get on to our It's a Bus segment, and this week we're back down to Florida, and this is a case from Panama City. And it involves what I feel like is some obvious racism. It involves medical cannabis and some discrepancies between the underground market and the legal market. And it's a whole big issue that we're seeing across the nation. So tell us what happened down there in Florida.
So some UPS employees noticed that some packages smelled funny. And they went ahead and called the police, which I disagree with. I don't think you should call the police, especially over something that smells like cannabis, but whatever. Rats be rats. Support your local post office. So the police, they called the police. The police came. The police found 190 pounds of cannabis in boxes. So they ended up, they seized that. And then they also stopped a driver. 31-year-old Yongying Wang. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that name. They smelled marijuana in that van, and they pulled out four more large boxes of cannabis in that van. So they arrested him, and he's in jail right now for cannabis trafficking charges and a few other crimes. That's not good. It's upsetting that he was arrested. But not out of like the realm of what we've seen happening on the war on drugs, you know. And you mentioned up when we were first started talking about the article, you wonder if anyone would have called if it had been a different kind of name on that package.
Yeah, I just really wonder that, because there's been cannabis shipped all across the country all the time. Lots and lots and lots of it. They had a big bust out here in Washington State with people shipping back and forth. They had, they were Chinese. I don't know the nationality of this man, but it just seems to be a theme, and it's really disturbing because Florida, as we know, they won't give any black people medical cannabis licenses, so they're just excluding people of color out of that legal market altogether, right there in Panama City. I have a friend who lives in Panama City. There are dispensaries all over the Panama City where people are making lots of money selling cannabis that are mostly all going to white people. And now here Mr. Wang comes along. He wants to make some money too. I don't know where the cannabis came from. I say give Mr. Wang a dispensary instead of arresting him. And let's stop this. Let's stop all these discrepancies.
And I'd like to bring up the conclusion of this article. It says, investigators said they're still trying to identify where the marijuana came from and where it was headed and who is involved. So here's what I'll say. Stay classy, Mr. Wang. Stay discreet. That's right. He ain't talking. So good job.
We really need to legalize this on a federal level, and we really need to open this up so that everybody can. Number one, let's stop arresting people for cannabis. That's number one. We can't keep putting people in jail when other people are making money off of this. Well, let's hope that this gets situated for Mr. Wang down there in Florida, although I suspect he'll probably be going for prison for a long time. We'll keep an eye on the story. I want to thank the audience for joining the show today, and we are about to get out of here. Hope you have a good rest of your week, Dig.
Me, I will. Thank you.
If you have questions or would like to comment on the show, you can reach us at thecannabiscorner840@gmail.com. To listen to back episodes or to subscribe to the show, find us all across the internet by searching The Cannabis Corner. How can folks get in touch with you, Dig?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Uncle Dig, and you can listen to my podcast, The Bagseed Chronicles, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you to Radio Tacoma and KTQA for their continued support. I'd also like to thank Aaron Foles for his production assistance. And finally, thank you for joining us on The Cannabis Corner.